All right, that's the wake-up call, everybody. Here we go, Volume 20, Five Path with Weight Loss Clients, Part 2 of the Banyan Online Hypnosis Supervision Meetings. Welcome, everyone, back. Today, we're going to really get into some nitty-gritty. Tonight's topic is a continuation of what we started working on last week. It's one of the most important issues for most hypnotherapists, helping clients to lose weight. That's the biggie. Helping clients to lose weight and stop smoking are the bread and butter of most hypnotherapy practices. Pun intended. Okay. This topic provides an excellent opportunity to examine the five path program in detail. In addition to talking about the specifics of weight loss, we're going to go into depth about the secret language feelings, and some nitty-gritty details regarding how to work with multiple ISEs and multiple emotional factors. All right. Well, last week I started off with a special list of issues to consider when working with weight loss clients. I'm going to start off again this week, but with a different issue list, with a special, a different issue list. A lot of people really have not given much consideration to all the different factors contributing to weight gain and the inability to lose weight. So I jotted some down for us to mull over. When you are working with your clients, I said a very big important part of being successful is listening to your clients and, you know, finding out what kind of changes they're willing to make and then suggesting those changes, see how well they're doing. Well, let's look here at some of the factors that contribute to weight gain or the inability to lose weight. Well, let's go down this bulleted list here. If you're with me live right now, it's on the screen, and if you're following along on the CD, take a look at that handout. And if you don't have a handout, call us right away and we'll fax one out to you. Okay, number one, training and education. First factors are family and cultural training. Some people have learned to eat the wrong foods, high fat and or high sugar foods. It's just the way they learn to eat. Another possibility is portion size. What was a good portion 50 years ago when you're working the farm or you're doing some kind of physical labor every day might not be the proper portion for the office dweller of today. So we need to watch portion size. What might have been appropriate in years past may not be appropriate now. And in some families, they've just plain learned to eat too large a portions, and they've handed it down from generation to generation. Okay, using food as a reward. This is another thing that gets handed down from generation to generation. Now, let me talk about this a little bit. You know, just between me and you, science has misled us in some regards. They've dumbed down their research in an attempt to talk to the population. And that they're kind of thinking, well, if we can give the population out there, everybody, some information, that's better than giving them no information. And sometimes they will make us think, scientists, nutritionalists, these people, physicians who do research into eating, they'll say, maybe something is genetic, when it, in fact it may not be genetic. They'll say, well, we'll see that the mother had the problem and the grandmother had the problem and great-grandmother was obese also, so it's genetic. That's not necessarily true. What it could be is just a behavior that's been handed down time after time. What we've got to be careful about, if you ever do read real scientific research, be wary of correlational studies. Just because two things are correlated, and that means like, gosh, they'll say being overweight is highly correlated to having a mother that's overweight or a father that's overweight. And they'll say, ah, see the genetic connection. But that's not necessarily true.